for the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Wilhelm versus A.G. Edwards. Mr. Gooch.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Thomas Gooch appearing on behalf of the appellant. My co-counsel, Christine Bedard, is also present. We believe the heart of this matter is the interpretation of Section 13B, Sub 2 of the Illinois Security Law as it applies to a mental incompetence. We believe the legislature was silent in the drafting of that statute on that issue, probably because of the rare instance of a stockbroker or a security dealer dealing with someone who is an adjudicated mental incompetent. We believe in this case, Margaret Wilhelm, well, it was not someone who was just suffering from a slight mental illness, but was severely mentally ill. It was impossible for her to understand anything that was taking place based on the allegations of the complaint, which for purposes of the district court had to be accepted as true. We therefore believe that the three-year statute of limitations, the statute of repose as contained in the Illinois Securities Act, did not begin to run from the date of sale.
Wait a minute, do you think the act applies at all?
Well, that's the other issue, Your Honor. I personally, no, I don't believe it applies at all. I don't believe that the Illinois securities law was ever designed to allow a security dealer to protect themselves from a civil liability when they do business with a mental incompetent.
Does the act protect anyone other than purchasers of securities?
It protects anyone dealing with a security dealer, either in the sale or the purchase of a security. But I don't believe it was designed to protect a dealer from a mental incompetent that they choose to do business with when the very formation of the contract is at issue.
So you think a seller does have a cause of action under this statute?
I believe there's some case law that would indicate that a seller does,
like what?
Although I've never been able to find a case that specifically says so. But I don't believe Margaret Wilhelm was a seller. I believe under the facts as we pled in the complaint, sir, that she was taken to a dealer by her son, who was subsequently sent to the penitentiary, and pledged stock already in her name and her dead husband's name to a margin account, so her son could then convert.
But if she were not mentally incompetent, then the act would apply, the Illinois law would apply.
That's another issue. There wasn't a sale.
Well, a pledge isn't good enough.
There was a deposit of securities that she already owned into the margin account, and then a pledging of that account or a borrowing of those against those securities by her son, and the subsequent sale by A.G. Edwards involuntarily to satisfy margin requirements, none of which involved the an act by Margaret Wilhelm.
But I just wondered whether you were arguing that even if she were competent, the statute would be inapplicable.
I do not believe that statute was designed to cover this type of a situation where someone takes securities that they already own and deposit them into a margin account, particularly when the contract formation is in question. And I think that begs the question.
That's what I find vague when you say, especially if the formation is in question, because that brings it back to the mental incompetent. I wonder whether you had a clean position about the meaning of the statute. It was unrelated to the competence issue.
We attack the decision of the district court on three different grounds, that being one of them. We believe the mental incompetency issue makes it clear that this statute does not apply. The question remains whether or not it would apply if she were mentally competent.
Right, that's what I keep asking.
You know, I don't believe it does.
Are you familiar with a case called Space against E.F. Hutton?
I'm sorry, sir?
Space against E.F. Hutton.
Yes, sir.
And doesn't that case hold that only the purchaser of securities has protection under the
Act? Yes. That's exactly what that case says. However, there are some other cases and the statutes that speak as anyone involved in a transaction, and I suppose that could be extended to mean a seller as well, who would be defrauded by a security dealer. But I believe primarily that statute was designed originally to protect someone from being duped in a boilerplate operation from buying worthless securities. I believe that was the original intent of the legislature.
But if the... What's the difference between being deceived into buying stock that's worthless or being deceived into selling valuable stock for an inadequate amount? Why wouldn't there be symmetrical forms of securities fraud?
The difference would be the wording of the statute, because the statute seems to speak, as do the cases, as the court points out, to purchasers. The difference in this case is that Margaret Wilhelm could not be deceived.
What language are you focusing on in the statute?
I'm sorry, sir?
What is the language that makes it indicate just purchasers?
The statute, in various places, I can't read the statute to you. The statute points to purchasers being defrauded. And the cases extend that to any type of negligent behavior by a broker against a purchaser. But I believe, again, that it comes down to whether or not she could
what about
be subject to this.
That's right. To engage in any transaction, practice, or course of business in connection with the sale or purchase of securities which works or tends to work a fraud or deceit upon the purchaser or seller thereof.
That would tend to indicate that it could involve a seller of securities.
Right.
However, we're not suggesting that A.G. Edwards ever did anything fraudulently. We're saying that they breached an implied fiduciary duty.
Yeah, but you regard them as complicit in the fraud.
We don't believe, and we have never alleged.
You think that... Well, you have to be arguing that because you think that if H.G. Edwards had no reason to think that Mrs. Wilhelm was incompetent, you would have no cause of action.
We believe that A.G. Edwards, as any layperson, by the observation of Mrs. Wilhelm, based on the allegations that we put
and
in...
And then your theory is that made Edwards complicit in the bad son's fraud.
We believe, sir, that it makes A.J. Edwards complicit in a violation of a fiduciary duty they owed her.
And a breach of fiduciary duty, that's what the statute is about.
It is short of fraud.
Short of fraud?
I believe so, sir.
Well, what's the part of the statute that punishes short of fraud?
It's the common law that applies that statute in any number of cases cited.
You have to have some statutory hook for your theory. What is it?
Our theory, Your Honor, is that...
Point me to something in the statute that supports the notion that Edwards can be guilty of something short of fraud, but only if a purchaser is involved.
No, sir. I believe that the statute opens the argument to both purchasers and sellers. I believe the common law has extended that statute to acts other than fraudulent acts.
Oh, okay, I'm lost there. Let me ask you another question. Now, when your client was made the guardian of Margaret Wilhelm, I suppose you say, that was on the basis that she was mentally incompetent?
Yes, sir.
Well, couldn't Wilhelm, this is going to your equitable tolling argument, when he was appointed guardian, couldn't he then have sued on her behalf?
He was only appointed the guardian of the person, not the guardian of the estate. We believe that these are factual arguments that were never addressed in the district court and never should have been raised, because we can rebut them, sir. You know, given the opportunity, we can rebut
the appellees.
He's
the guardian. She's incompetent. She's still alive, so the estate doesn't come into picture. So while she's alive and he's her guardian, why can't he protect her legal rights?
Because at the time he became her guardian, he may well not have been aware of all what took place to wrong her at that time.
That's a separate question, but you agree that once he was guardian, he had the legal authority to sue on her behalf.
He could have sued on her behalf, yes, sir.
If he knew. Okay,
yes,
thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Santangelo?
May it please the Court, Jerry Santangelo on behalf of the defendant appellee, H.E. Edwards and Company. Judge Ripple, in answer to your question, is conceded by plaintiff. The Illinois Securities Act clearly provides relief for both purchasers and sellers of securities.
What do we do with the two Illinois cases who say it doesn't?
I believe those cases do not properly interpret the statute.
But that creates a problem for us as a federal court interpreting the statute. We've got two intermediate appellate courts in the state of Illinois, both of whom say that only a plaintiff has a cause of action. And I really don't care what, frankly, the appellant says about the statute.
Yeah.
I've got to come to attention and salute when the Illinois courts tell me what
yeah.
it means.
But if you look at the Illinois statute itself, both Section 12, which provides the violation, specifically provides for violations in connection with a purchase or sale.
Looking at Section 12F?
12F, 12G, among others. 12I, in connection with the purchase or sale of any security. Section 13, Your Honor, establishes the private right of action.
Mm-hmm.
And Section A, which is, I think, the cases that you are referring to, are talking about Section A.
Mm-hmm.
Section G, however, specifically provides that any person, whenever any person is engaged in any violation of this act, and you drop down under a proper showing, the court shall grant rescission of any sales or purchases of securities determined to be unlawful under this act. That's a specific statutory provision for relief by a seller of securities under the Illinois Securities Act.
Now, assuming that that subsection would apply here, how is this woman either a purchaser or a seller of securities?
She clearly was a seller. What their position is that she owned these 6,348 shares of American Electric Power stock. That stock was improperly taken from her, improperly sold, and she didn't participate in the benefits of any of those sales because she didn't get the actual money. It was dissipated by her son, Frank.
Is there any theory on which you could characterize her as a purchaser of securities?
She did not purchase securities in connection with the transactions that are complained of. The connection here is the retitling of that stock, the deposit of that stock into the A.G. Edwards account, and the subsequent sale of that stock in that account back in 1993.
At risk of monopolizing, Mr. Santangelo, let me ask you one other question, and that is, with respect to the activity of her son, did he purchase securities with the funds of on margin relying on this account? So what did he do with this money?
Well, we don't really know. I mean, some of the allegations in the complaint are that he margined this money by writing checks,
mm-hmm.
like in the Sanford case where the Supreme Court dealt with where he was writing checks and that would result in the sale of mutual funds in that case. Here it would result potentially in the sale of securities. But ultimately, they specifically plead that all 6,348 shares were sold.
So they were sold on her account, so she was the seller.
Yes. Yes, and she clearly claimed that she has an interest in that security. And the Section 13G does not say, and this is further to your issue, Mr. Judge Ripple, does not say it's relying upon the relief that you can specifically obtain under the Illinois Securities Act. Rather, it says whether the claim is reliant upon or because of any of the matters for which relief is granted by this act. Clearly, we have a situation where they're complaining about transactions, course of business, or practice in connection with the sale of securities. That is a provision that specifically provides for relief under the Illinois Securities Act. That's why Section 13D and the limitations period of Section 13D applies, rather than the 5-year general catch-all phrase, which specifically states it only applies unless otherwise provided for. The Illinois Securities Act clearly otherwise provides for the appropriate limitations period. So this is really a straightforward application of the Illinois Securities.
What in their complaint, what do they ask for in terms of the relief?
It's interesting. They ask for not only the value of the stock, which is the sales, which I think they valued at about $230,000 in 1993, but they also asked Judge Ripple for the dividends that stock would have generated over the last 8+ years. That, to me, is a type of rescissionary damages that they're seeking. I don't know, we haven't gotten into the issue of whether they're allowed to get that kind of relief, but to me that indicates that it's a rescissionary type of relief that they seek by seeking those dividends, which again would fall right under 13G. But again, it's not important whether they actually could get the specific relief under statute, which I believe under 13G they could, but whether their claims are reliant upon matters for which relief is granted under the statute. Here, clearly it is. The one argument they raised below, or in this court actually, was, well, we don't allege that A.G. Edwards had an intent to defraud. As we've demonstrated, no intent to defraud is required under the statute. And their convoluted interpretation that this isn't a repose period, because it somehow can extend by the three-year period. Under the Illinois statute, it's very clear. It's 3 years from the date of sale. You get up to two more years if you neither knew nor the exercise of reasonable diligence should have known, but a maximum of 5 years from the date of the securities transaction. It's clear, the statute's clear, this court has recognized that it's a statute of repose in both the Norris versus Wirtz case and other decisions pre-LAMP where you're applying the Illinois Securities Act to 10b-5 claims. It's clearly a statute of repose, and there is no exception under this statute of repose for minors or incompetence or any other exception to people who cannot apply 5 year period to. The only cases they point to are their specific statutory exceptions to the repose period, like the medical malpractice statute. They have no case that says a statute of repose must be extended because of alleged incompetence. And it's important to note, too, she was not an adjudicated incompetent at the time of these transactions occurred.
When was she adjudicated incompetent?
I believe, Your Honor, it was in 1995, at the time that the plaintiff, Robert Wilhelm, was appointed the guardian of the incompetent. At that point, I believe that was when she was determined to be incompetent. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Appreciate the
answer. Mr. Gooch, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Mm-hmm. We allege in our complaint that Margaret Wilhelm was a mental incompetent in 1989. That's an allegation taken as true for purposes of the Rule 12 motion to dismiss. We alleged a number of things that made her incompetent. The courts adjudicated her mentally incompetent in 1995, but she was clearly incompetent at the time of these security transactions. We have never argued that there was an equitable tolling. We believe that the proper way of construing the limitation periods in the Illinois security law in view of the other statutes providing
you're
mental
not
incompetence.
Equitable.
We
not
very clearly
equitable tolling at all.
We very clearly, Your Honor, in our reply brief set forth that we did not believe that equitable tolling applied, and we were not arguing equitable tolling. We were arguing the way the clear meaning of that statute should be applied. We don't believe it's convoluted. We think it's pretty clear that it's a three-year period otherwise applicable, which applies in this case because she could not possibly have discovered what was done to her.
That would undo statutes of repose pretty thoroughly, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, thank you
thank
very
you,
much
Honor.
To both counsel.